Scientists at Tulane University's Primate Research Center announced they have taught a gorilla that someday it will die. Nate Meredith has more in the lab report.
Thanks, Dan. In an historic first, a team of primatologists has succeeded in teaching Quigley, a western lowland gorilla, the concept of mortality and his inevitable doom. Lana Burrows and Philip Townsend are the researchers leading the project.
When we first started with Quigley, he was just a normal, happy ape, not a care in the world.
Well, the first thing we did was we taught him patterns, like right. Red block, blue block, green block, over and over. Then it became a pattern of gorilla born, gorilla grow, gorilla die, over and over.
Right.
The researchers then showed Quigley photographs of dead and dying gorillas while communicating the phrases "you someday" and "no choice."
It took thousands of repetitions, but Quigley finally became cognizant of the correlation between himself and the decomposing pile of hair and flesh in the photo.
Quigley shared his feelings in a confessional after completing each exercise.
That was a great moment.
Yes.
Quigley also began painting pictures like these almost every day. To make sure Quigley retains the awareness of his own demise, the team spends several hours per day reinforcing the certainty of death's arrival.
Quigley, you die. You will die soon.
The researchers say at first Quigley could only communicate rudimentary fears about his own death, but he soon moved on to expressing more complex emotions like indifference and self-hatred. And just 2 days ago, Philip Townsend and his colleagues even witnessed what they believed to have been a panic attack in Quigley.
He was letting out these anguished cries and banging his head against the wall, and I just thought, we did it.
The Tulane scientists believe that we may be able to teach a gorilla to resort to alcoholism or even try to kill itself in as little as a decade. The scientists next plan to test whether the results with Quigley can be replicated with other species. They are in the initial stages of teaching bunny rabbits that they will all die.
You will both die.
These are thrilling times. For the lab report, I'm Nate Meredith.
Thanks, Nate. Scientists in Britain are conducting a similar study, teaching a mouse with a human ear grafted to its back what a freak it is.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
There is a possibility, a slight one, that California could ban Shamu. Yes, indeed, it is true. This week, California state legislature put in a bill that would ban killer whale shows at SeaWorld in San Diego. The bill would outlaw orca performances, ban captivity breeding programs, and prohibit the exporting of whales out of the state. The existing whales would be returned, will either be retired to sea pens, or permitted to be displayed, but not perform. SeaWorld absolutely hates this, and of course they hate it. As everybody saw in the documentary Blackfin and the whole like Blackfish, excuse me, it was crazy. Like I watched this thing, I mean, it was horrible. And it was all about this orca whale named Tillicum, who basically killed two trainers. She killed Dawn here at SeaWorld, SeaWorld Orlando, as well as killed a trainer in Spain. And basically now Tillicum's gene he was also part of a breeding program. So he was breeding multiple of whales all across the country. So most of the performing whales, a good chunk of them, are sons or grandsons or great-grandsons or granddaughters, great-granddaughters or daughters of Tillicum, which is that same sort of crazy, not really crazy gene, but the same sort of hyperactivity gene that, you know, caused Tillicum to kill Dawn, one of the trainers in SeaWorld named Dawn. Now, this bill would stop that from happening. In response to the bill, SeaWorld suggested the bill, even if enacted, would be struck down. The premise behind the proposed legislation, is what SeaWorld says, is severely flawed on multiple levels, and it violates its validity is highly questionable under the United States and California Constitution. Well, the question I have for SeaWorld is, so how many more trainers do you guys want to die? Now, you guys already know I'm not a big believer in animal captivity. I think it's a horrible idea. Like, if you go to the zoo, that's great. I'm not telling you not to go to the zoo. I just don't go to zoos and I don't go to the circus because I don't like the idea of seeing animals in utter and total captivity, not outside of their natural habitat. But let's just have a real conversation about this whole killer whale thing. So this killer whale, like the key word here is killer whales. They eat like seals for a living, right? That's how they eat. They just swallow seals. You put them in a small pen, no bigger than like your backyard swimming pool, or like no bigger than water, like some sort of water world. And you expect them to keep to stay there and live their lives there when they usually spend their lives in the open ocean. It just doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. And you're putting your trainers in harm's way. You're putting the folks that go watch these shows in harm's way. And most importantly, you're putting the whales in harm's way.
SeaWorld announced Thursday that it will challenge a state ruling that banned the company from breeding captive killer whales at its San Diego park. The announcement comes a week after the California Coastal Commission endorsed the $100 million expansion of the tanks SeaWorld uses to hold orcas in San Diego. That ruling also outlined a series of restrictions on SeaWorld, including a ban on breeding and prohibitions on the sale, trade, or transfer of the whales. SeaWorld said it would pursue legal action and hired a law firm, but it wasn't immediately clear if that would lead to a lawsuit, regulatory appeal, or other action.
The bodies of sea whales. More than 300 of the mammals have washed up on the shores of Chilean Patagonia in one of the largest mass strandings ever recorded. Experts are still unsure of what has caused this. The scene was described as apocalyptic by scientists who led an expedition to the Gulf of Penas in southern Chile, where the bodies lie. 20 of these 10-foot animals were found washed up in April of this year. Director of the National Fishing and Agriculture Service, José Miguel Burgos, said that investigations are still underway to discover the causes of the deaths. Although human intervention has been ruled out, the cause behind the whales' deaths still remains unknown. Some scientists believe fatal viruses in the water may be at the root of the problem. This endangered species is one of the fastest, reaching speeds of up to 30 miles per hour and can grow up to 18 metres in length. It is believed that finding the dead whales could help develop protection policies and even create a sanctuary in the Gulf of Penas.
I'm Juliana McCanus, sitting in for Clifford Baines, who stormed off after seeing our new set. An audit of the U.S. Department of Education has found that 84% of the national elementary school budget is currently allocated solely for teaching students about whales. But is this enough? Should we be teaching our children more about whales?
I think that this has been an overlooked issue for a long time, and now more than ever, our kids deserve the education that they need to understand whales.
There is enough funding. We're not using it properly.
Okay. That money could be better spent taking those children and putting them in the ocean to study superpods of whales and the different varieties, things that they would never get to see, minke whales.
I think we need to go beyond the $84 million so that every school has its own whale, a whale for
That's
a school.
That's right. When I went to school in the inner city, we didn't learn about whales. Only thing I knew about whales was that they were large.
How are we going to get live whales to the inner city children, to the kids in the Midwest who have no access to the oceans because they're landlocked?
Mm. It's crucial. There's always the issue of teaching to the test. Students in the U.S. scored 20th in the world on this year's Comprehensive Whale Aptitude Exam. Mm-hmm. Are we falling behind the world?
Yes, but it really needs to start in the home. Parents need to start taking more responsibility and not leave everything up to the school system.
Studies have proven that if a mother gently coos a whale song to her embryo, to her fetus, that that child is better prepared for whale education as he gets into
the
school.
My mother was too busy working to be cooing no whale songs to me.
I think that's the main problem. The parents don't have the education.
Adult classes are terribly important. And I know that you said you're in the middle of an adult education class.
Yes, continuing education. And I am enjoying it very much. I'm learning a little whale now.
Yeah?
Okay, here we go.
This eagle's place is in the sky. She's still got a lot of flying to do. You can see it in her eye, though she's cried a bit for what we've put her through. She soared above the lifted lamp that guards sweet freedom's door. In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar once more. Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar.
Two brothers in Canada just changed the selfie game. Michael Fletcher and his brother Neil posted this video of them rescuing an eagle from a trap. Well, after a number of tries and a dog who was anxious to see just what was going on, they finally put a hoodie over the eagle to calm it down and freed its talon. Then, look at this. Before the eagle flew off, the two brothers took this amazing selfie. Look at his face. Michael said he was shocked by how big and beautiful it was up close. But it looks like that eagle smiling and saying, thanks so much.
But he was like, after everything you guys have done, I'm going to stick around for a moment and take a selfie with you.
Take a picture and smile right there.
Oh, my gosh.
Wonderful. Heroes there.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar. Soar with healing in her wings as the land beneath her sings. Only God, no other kings. Let the mighty eagle soar. Only God, no other kings. Let the mighty eagle soar.
Andre Kotz has worked with elephants for 25 years and knows the obvious behaviors that will show the elephants are hearing the infrasound.
Andre, even though these are rescued elephants, do you still see a change in behavior when a thunderstorm's approaching like they would in the wild?
When they hear a thunderstorm, they'll more than likely turn their backsides together, face into the thunderstorm, ears out, with a spontaneous freeze. It's as though there's a secret message or something that happens and they just stand still. After the spontaneous freeze, you'll more than likely find that they start chatting amongst each other, low rumbles.
If they respond in that way to our thunderstorm, then that's proof in a way that they can hear a part of the sound spectrum that we can't even tap
absolutely
into.
Absolutely, absolutely, without a question of doubt.
Although the speaker is positioned close to the elephants, the infrasound it produces will have the intensity of a distant storm. The herd is busy feeding, so Patrick is looking for a definite change in behavior.
Bruce, I think we're ready to play the speaker.
Okay, Patrick, audio in 2 seconds.
It may seem strange, but because the camper van is generating sounds below our hearing threshold, we can't hear it. But we can certainly see it as air inside the van vibrates with sound energy. The elephants react immediately, turning to the speaker. They're clearly reacting to the sound, but Patrick can't hear a thing.
That's incredible. They've all stopped and they've changed their behavior as soon as Bruce started playing that sound from the camper van. You can even hear them vocalizing. Their ears fanning out. It's absolutely amazing how it completely changes their behavior. Bruce, it worked.
There's absolutely no question about it, and their ability to determine the direction the sound was coming from, I was really impressed with that.
The elephants are back feeding now, but virtually the entire herd turned and faced our infrasonic speaker, listening in to that secret sound of the storm.
This hidden channel of infrasound could explain a great mystery of the natural world. How elephants know where to go when they migrate vast distances in search of water.
Schoolie celebrations have wrapped up at Victor Harbour, with authorities praising the class of 2015 for their behaviour over the weekend. But the event was marred by a number of ugly incidents, resulting in 27 arrests and a shocking case of animal cruelty.
Stopped and searched, police shake down young revellers as they hunt for drugs, another 5 arrests on what was a quieter night for authorities. As this year's graduates said goodbye. But it wasn't a year without incident, this violent brawl between 4 men marring the opening night. In total, 240 people fell foul of the law. Of those, 27 were arrested, all but 9 were toolies. Drug trafficking a major concern for police, with more than 300 ecstasy pills seized.
We do get the minority who are here to disrupt and, you know, here for the wrong reasons. It is a minority.
One of the most shocking incidents for police involved an 18-year-old Renmark man who was reported for cruelty to an animal after allegedly dismembering a turtle at Goolwa. But the majority of schoolies made the most of celebrations, drawing praise from organisers.
We've been exceptionally pleased with the behaviour and the positive choices that our young people have made.
The partying took its toll on some schoolies, more than 340 treated by paramedics, 34 required hospitalisation.
I think it's kind of 3 days of having a good time has probably caught up with a few of them, but
nearly all the patients that we have seen have been minor injuries. There's been no serious injuries.
Today it was time to pack up and hit the road.
It was just a good vibe everywhere.
As the next chapter for these school leavers begins. It's a cool.
We have some dramatic video tonight from Collingwood. It shows police killing an animal in a residential area. And how they did it is shocking.
As Roger Klein explains, the animal may not have been a danger to anyone. We should warn you that some viewers may find some of the images in this report quite disturbing.
Well, we had a coyote issue going on here for a while.
Kelly O'Neill says her neighbors warned her last night that there was a coyote wandering around the neighborhood before it showed up at her front door and wouldn't go away.
It just kept hanging around and it was not afraid of the vehicle at all. It just kind of, if anything, kind of was lurking around and looking at the vehicle and yeah, it wasn't afraid at all.
Neighbors called animal control and police. O'Neill kept an eye on the animal until an OPP cruiser arrived. She says she was shocked by what happened next. The cruiser bumped the animal as it stood on the road, and when it didn't run away, the cruiser ran over the animal two more times.
Stop it! No!
Oh my God! Oh my God!
Then the officer got out of the car and shot the animal as residents looked on. The video was shared between friends before it was posted on social media today. In a brief statement, police said they are aware of the video and they are looking into the circumstances surrounding the incident. They add that the OPP is committed to the humane destruction of wild animals that pose a threat to public safety.
Such a sad existence, sad existence, to be in this sorry state, this sorry state. Oh, I'm so fragile, that if you push me, that if you push me, I could break, I could break. Open your eyes. My heart still bleeds, I depend on you to care for me. Open your eyes, my heart still bleeds, I depend on you to care for me. Oh, save my soul, save me now, 'cause I am falling. Oh, save my soul.
Police officer was found not guilty of animal cruelty charges. Jeffrey Bolger was accused of cutting the throat of a dog last June, and Bolger's lawyers say it was an act of mercy that the Shar Pei was strangling after being caught in a dog pole. Well, the lawyers also said the dog had earlier bitten a pregnant woman, and Bolger thought it was dangerous, so prosecutors say the animal was not a threat.
Save me. Save me now.
I'm Juliana McCanus, sitting in for Clifford Baines, who is hunting down the scumbag who killed his father. PETA has been fighting for animal rights for decades, with little success. Shouldn't animals be helping more to win the fight for their rights?
Well, I'll tell you, right now, it's a very every animal for itself attitude out there. They need to organize.
Yes, I think animals need to take control of their own future, and I've been telling that to my dog for years. Oh, but
I tell my cat.
But if they ever want to vote, they had better start learning how to march.
They have tried, and they have failed miserably. Do we remember when PETA tried to organize that million dog march down in Washington?
Oh, don't tell
it was a mess, you know. I mean, not only did they not build in the infrastructure for cleaning up after themselves, but it just was not organized.
It was a disaster. We all agree.
I think they have to stop eating each other and really kind of come to the table and say, all right, we're all on the same page here.
And that's what PETA doesn't understand.
Animals have traditionally been politically apathetic.
Well, animals need to demand their rights to fair animal trials. Then they can wear little robes and dress up like lawyers and kind of like have a jury.
Don't forget the little hats.
I agree, but which of them deserves the rights?
Well, I know one that doesn't deserve the rights, and that's the water buffalo. And I will be dead and in the ground, eaten by maggots, before I see a water buffalo same rights as I.
If PETA dropped the so-called problem animals, would they have more success?
If anything, the great white sharks, the anacondas, and the...
I don't like those hermit crabs.
For me, the only thing that's keeping me from being a card-carrying member of PETA is their persistent support of the water buffaloes.
I mean, nobody is going to argue with that point.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, but some people do argue with that.
What should
that
they
point.
Do to get these rights for animals?
Just keep throwing paint on people.
Because people love having paint thrown on them.
Yes, it's lovely.
Good boy.
Friends, I am sorry to vent, but I am sick and tired of strangers telling me to get my kids off their dog at the public park. Call me old-fashioned, but in the Devlin family, we still ride dogs. I mean, kids are kids. If there is a dog in the area, they're going to climb onto it and ride it like a fast little horse. A lot of dog owners love it, but many times people give me dirty looks and eye rolls like my kids don't belong at the park on their dogs. And then today, little Jackson climbed aboard this adorable Rottweiler and the crazed owner starts yelling at me. Of course, I ignored him. Maybe you and your dog wish you lived in a world with no children, but I live in the real world where my kids ride your dogs. And if you don't like it, don't take your dog to the park where kids are. Don't bring your dog to the coffee shop. Don't walk your dog near the library. Don't tie your dog up outside the bodega because children will be there and they will ride your dog. And if there's a kid riding your dog, let go of the leash. If he needs to steer, he can tug on the ears. I mean, I remember when I was a little girl, I rode dogs all the time. I once rode a beautiful yellow lab right down Gilbert Street in Duxbury, Massachusetts, fast as the wind. And did anyone yell? No. They waved and honked and said, "Way to go, Gracie! Ride that dog!" They put it in the newspaper that Sunday. You guys get it. Of all the photos I post, the dog riding ones are your favorites, judging by the comments you leave on my blog. But nowadays, it seems like all of society would rather pick on a mom for letting her kids have a little fun. After that Rottweiler owner complained to the police, a cop actually got involved. He told me to remove my kids from the dog's back. Maybe police departments should be solving murders and robberies instead of trampling on my rights as a mother. Listen, I will never submit to an unjust law. Even if I am arrested and locked up and thrown away in a dungeon, my children will continue to clutch onto every dog they see and ride them full speed while I snap wonderful photos because I refuse to apologize for being a good mom. That's it for now, moms. I'm going to take a frustration nap. In the meantime, remember, the biggest monster in the room is often the tiniest problem in your past.
Fido, your leash is too long. You go where you don't belong. You've been digging in the rubble, getting bitches in trouble. Fido, your leash
shadow. Your leash is too long.
About Bruce Jenner. The guy's cool. I'm more of an animal rights activist. I'm more concerned about that man's pets. Like, yo, man, you can't just change your identity like that on a dog. That dog's in that mansion confuses.
Oh my God.
Like, where the hell is Bruce?
Miniature donkey has been reunited with his owner. This after being rescued by a Norman resident and police officer. Let me show you a little squishy taking a ride in a patrol car. The story has caught international attention this week. News Channel 4's Kristen Shanahan met his owner today. Kristen, we've been calling the donkey Squishy, but actually it has a real name.
His name is Cruz. He belongs to Dr. Matt Spaulding, a Norman chiropractor. He said he noticed Cruz missing Tuesday night when he got home from work. After hours of worrying, he's relieved to have Cruz back home safe and sound.
Cruz, the miniature donkey, is getting back to his roots, roaming 112 acres and eating his favorite food.
Come here, buddy.
After a day away from home, he's back on familiar turf with his buddies and caretaker, Dr. Matt Spaulding.
Glad to be home, aren't you?
Dr. Spaulding says he became worried Tuesday evening when Cruz wasn't anywhere to be found.
The three horses came up to me and then no Cruz.
But relief when he learned the missing donkey pictured riding in the back of Officer Kyle Kanan's car was his.
I don't know how they got him in there. That's why they say they called him Squishy. They squished him up in there.
He thinks Cruz somehow escaped underneath this electric wire fence. The doctor now thanking the officer and neighbor who saved his loving friend.
I'm just grateful for good neighbors and, you know, and they kept him safe until I could get him back. So they did a great job.
A great deed for a funny little fellow whose adventure brought him world fame.
He's pretty popular, so good little boy.
And he is a good little boy. Dr. Spaulding has owned Cruz for over 2 years now. Cruz is a retired basketball donkey. People used to ride on his back while playing the game.
Wish I had a doggy in my soul. Carry all my burdens home. All the things which I can't atone. I can say, but I cannot disown. Wish I had a donkey in my soul. Wish I had a cellar in my chest. Strolling through where towns are pressed. Winter could cover the ground with its best. But I still have somewhere warm where I can rest. Wish I had a cellar. I had a mountain. so that after each time it rains, I wash away all my aches and my pains. At least I had a sinkhole in my veins.
Clinton was recently speaking in Iowa for Hillary Clinton in the run-up to the U.S. presidential elections. Check this out.
Came to see him. So give him a big hand and maybe he'll know you got it. Thank you. And thank you. So the other thing. Okay, we got it. We got it. Thank you. So wait. Thank you. We got it. Will you please quit now? Thank you. Thank you. Give him a hand. Let me tell you something. At least that guy's for something. He didn't come here to badmouth anybody, and we ought to give him a hand. In this world, that's rare enough.
Bill Clinton was actually eating 100% plant-based vegan diet a few years ago. It was when he had heart problems, and he switched to 100% vegan diet and started to reverse his heart disease. And in 2010, he started to speak out about the benefits of this way of eating. Check this out.
I'm vegan as well, and I know that you're eating plant-based diet, which is, do you just feel much better?
Oh, yeah.
We've got a heartbreaking story coming up now about 66 apes. This story centers around the New York Blood Center, which set up a virus testing lab in Liberia in 1974 and began trapping wild chimps and apes in this center. Scientists have been infecting them with diseases like hepatitis and river blindness to help develop vaccines for the illnesses. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, this is where the story gets really, really messy. The facility was abandoned in 2005 and funding was cut in March this year, despite the facility promising to care for the chimps for life. So as a result, these chimps have been deserted on 6 islands without sufficient food, without natural drinking water. And the Animal Protection Charity, because of this, now need $40,000 worth of donations every month to feed and care for the animals. Basically, the New York Blood Center have messed up massively. They have not stuck to their word. And as a result, there's been a big backlash from the animal rights community. And they've been protesting big time.
The reason we're targeting Lori Blumshire is because she's on the board of the New York Blood Center, which, as everybody knows, abandoned 66 chimps in Liberia with no food or water. We're going to go to their board members, and we're going to keep coming back over and over until they see the light, show some compassion, and reinstate the funding for these chimps.
Lori Glitcher, if you continue to cut the funding for the chimps, we'll be back!
We'll be back! We'll be back! We'll be back!
In other news, plant-based doctor, Dr. Garth Davis, has got a new book coming out.
I have a new book out. It's called Proteinaholic, Our Obsession with Meat and Why It's Killing Us. And I wrote this book because probably the biggest problem I got getting people to change their diet was this obsession with protein. The more I educated myself, the more shocked I was. that people don't know about this, that other doctors don't know about this, that medical schools aren't teaching this. And the simple fact that a plant-based diet could just change your life and every disease that I treat.
We got some other news coming in. Students at over 150 colleges in the US are promoting plant-based diets for Wildlife Week. The idea was to get students to make the connection between meat consumption and environmental destruction. Jennifer Molador, senior food campaigner for the Center of Biological Diversity, who are behind this campaign, said the connection between eating veggie burgers and saving wolves isn't immediately intuitive to everyone. I can completely agree with her. She went on to say, we wanted to bring that connection home, that meat production is the single most environmentally destructive industry on the planet. In other news, well, it's not really news, this is nothing new. I've done a video on this before, but I've just seen a nice graph on how more and more people are searching vegan on Google these days.
I live in America, I can eat anything I want. I turn vegan, I'm a traitor. Not even eating half the shit I can eat. It's tough telling people you're a vegan, man. They get upset with you. You're a vegan? What the fuck is your problem? Your parents know about this shit? Hey, hey, calm down, homeless dude. We both ain't eating. You know, the messed up part about being a vegan is that I don't even know if this shit really works. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to keep it real. I don't know if this really works. Like, the only way I know if this works is if I live a long time. And then everybody I wanted to prove a point to is dead. They won't even be around to see that this shit really worked. And then if I die early, there's going to be a whole bunch of unhealthy people clowning me at my funeral, you know? Look at the dead, healthy vegan. I told you that shit didn't work. You wasted valuable bacon eating time. I eat pork balls and I'm alive. Squeeze out some pork ball juice for the dead, healthy vegan way here. I'm disrespectful. I got on a 9-piece leather suit at your funeral. My socks is made out of leather. I don't care. My feet are sweating. I don't give a fuck. I got a belt made out of sausage links. Look at this. Look at this. Goes all the way around. Look at this. I got a handkerchief made out of ham. It's a handkerchief. I just ate my handkerchief at your funeral. Meanwhile, I'm laying in my casket going, dude, I died in a plane crash. Everybody died. This ain't got nothing to do with diet. What type of priest are you? Who invited you to this funeral? You know what the toughest part about being a vegan is? Is telling your black family when you go visit on a holiday that you're not going to eat your mother's cooking. It's offensive, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was easier for my brother to tell my family he was gay than it was for me to tell him I'm a vegan, you know what I'm saying? Like, my father was like, listen, if your brother can put a dick in his mouth, you can eat meat. Yeah, Dad, I'm not sure you know what a vegan is. It's got nothing to do with sexuality, you know what I'm saying? Good thing is, I can eat meat anytime I want. This is some choice, you know what I'm saying?
Non-believers, I did in fact capture the legendary poop emoji monster. The truth is out there, my friends. So throughout history, there have always been people that have claimed to see creatures that are unordinary. These creatures are often referred to as cryptids, paranormal creatures whose existence has been suggested but never proven by the scientific community. And while some simply dismiss these sightings as folklore, the sheer number of sightings of some of these creatures has many wondering if their existence is more than just a myth. So today, I gathered the most famous and intriguing cryptids of all time to share with you all. So here they are. 10 mystical cryptids that may actually exist. Number one is Bigfoot. One of the most famous cryptids of all time is the legendary Bigfoot. Reports of its existence have been around for decades, even before it had a name, until it was eventually named Bigfoot in the 1950s. Also known as the Sasquatch or Yeti, these creatures are named after their enormous footprints, which are as large as 60 centimeters by 20 centimeters. Found primarily in the forests of North America, they're described as large ape-like creatures covered in dark brown hair around 3 meters tall, weighing in excess of 227 kilograms. Of the numerous reports that have been filed, the descriptions of these creatures have all been quite consistent, lending credibility to these sightings. Currently, much of the scientific community dismisses the idea of a Bigfoot existing, but some scientists have spent a large part of their career researching it. These omnivorous, hairy, nocturnal creatures are known for having an extremely unpleasant and pungent smell. So before you go reporting a sighting, make sure it isn't just a furry homeless man, because they don't appreciate being called a Yeti. It's kind of insensitive. Number two is the Chupacabra. First reported in 1995 in Puerto Rico, the Chupacabra is also known to inhabit North, South, and Central America. Its name, which literally translates from Spanish as goat sucker, was given after 8 animals were found dead, each bearing the same 3 puncture wounds in their chest drained of all their blood. Physical descriptions state that it's a reptile-like creature with leathery or scaly greenish-gray skin with quills or spines running down its back. It's said to be 1.2 meters tall and stands and hops in a fashion similar to that of a kangaroo. There are countless reports of this creature killing livestock, with reports steadily increasing since it was first reported. Some in the scientific community explain away the existence of the Chupacabra, saying that they're probably just raccoons, wild dogs, or coyotes that have sarcoptic mange, a skin disease that causes hair loss. If these things exist, I really hope they don't suddenly get a taste for human blood, because fighting off kangaroo lizard vampires doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Number three is the Acarinus. Unlike the other cryptids on this list, this one is unique in that it is not an animal, but a mysterious tribe that is reported to live deep in the Amazon rainforest. Also known as White Amazonian Indians, the first contact was made in 1977 by the springs of the Araguaia River. An Anglo-Brazilian expedition found themselves surrounded by tall, blonde, naked individuals speaking a language they had never heard before. There was only ever one other momentary encounter with this tribe in 1979, by the members of a secondary expedition. Since these two encounters, no other contact with this tribe has been made, leading many to believe that the Brazilian government is trying to cover up their existence for reasons unknown. Has anyone ever considered that maybe they're just regular white folk who got lost in the rainforest years ago and simply adapted while searching for help? Haven't you ever seen the movie Castaway? Same thing. I bet they even have a volleyball named Wilson. Number four is the Nunda. The Nunda is said to be a gigantic, ferocious gray feline that stalks the East African country of Tanzania. Both its size and strength are said to exceed that of a lion's by a considerable amount. The creature was first brought to the public's attention in 1922 by William Hitchens, a British administrator working in Tanzania that reported seeing a tribe attacked by the giant creature. Interestingly, unlike the other cryptids, this one has solid evidence with hair samples actually being collected from the animal. The samples were analyzed, concluding that there is in fact a new species of carnivorous mammal out there. A Scottish hunter named Patrick Bowen once attempted to hunt the creature and failed, but did find the creature's footprints and additional hair samples. The Nunda is also said to be the inspiration for the Nundu, a leopard-like magical creature mentioned in J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter novels. This is interesting, but I'm allergic to cats, let alone gigantic cats that could take my head off with a single swipe, so I'm cool if it remains hidden. Number five is the Aul. Believed to be a giant bat, the Aul is said to live in the deepest parts of the jungles of Java in Indonesia. The first ever report of this creature was by Dr. Ernest Bartels in 1925. It's said to have a face with the features of a chimp and bat, large dark eyes, large claws, red-skinned wings, and lots of gray fur. With a massive wingspan of 3.7 meters, it's twice the size of that of the largest known bat. They're omnivores that feed on a large range of sources and hunt by stalking their prey upside down in the trees of the rainforest. Very little else is known about them other than they are absolutely nightmare fuel. Number 6 is the Canby Island Monster. This cryptid was discovered in the United Kingdom in 1953 when the carcass of one washed up on the shores of Canby Island. It's approximately 76 centimeters long with thick reddish-brown skin, bulging eyes, and gills. It has hind legs with five-toed horseshoe-shaped feet and no forelimbs. The first carcass ever discovered was actually cremated as a cursory inspection by zoologists determined that it posed no threat to the public. A second, much larger carcass was discovered just a year later in 1954 at 120 centimeters long, weighing in at 11.3 kilograms. What happened to the second carcass remains a mystery to this day, with no official explanation ever given. Originally, it was mistaken to be an anglerfish and is just as hideous, except this thing has feet, meaning it has the option to strut its repugnancy across the ocean floor, like a bouse. Number 7 is the Loch Ness Monster. One of the most infamous and controversial cryptids of all time is the Loch Ness Monster. The earliest report of it was in the book The Life of St. Columbia from the 7th century, and since then has become a creature of legend. Believed to inhabit the deep waters of Scotland, many in the scientific community dismiss this sea creature as myth, while others recognize the very real possibility that it may exist. Affectionately nicknamed Nessie, this creature caught the world's attention in 1933 in a photograph taken by Hugh Gray. However, the most iconic photo of Nessie was taken just a year later by a London gynecologist named Robert Kenneth Wilson, although many believe it to be a hoax. Countless pictures and video have been taken, all claiming to be proof of the elusive creature, although no one has ever 100% proven its existence. It's interesting that they nicknamed it a cute name like Nessie when, if it does in fact exist, it's likely a terrifyingly vicious dinosaur. That's like nicknaming a T-Rex Fluffy. Doesn't really work. Number 8 is the Maltese Tiger. The Maltese or Blue Tiger is a rare tiger said to have a coloration morph that exists mostly in the Fujian province of China. Their amazing coloration gives them a bluish look with dark gray stripes. These, along with all South Chinese tigers, are endangered because of their continued use in traditional Chinese medicine. Part of what makes this tiger so elusive is that their mutation has the potential to fade away over time, making them almost impossible to identify even if found. One of the most notable encounters was in 1910 when a man named Harry Caldwell discovered one of these tigers and made a note of its strikingly beautiful appearance. Guys, these tigers, if they even exist anymore, are beautiful and super rare, so you should probably stop putting them in your headache medicine. Damn! Number 9 is the Globster. Perhaps the strangest cryptid on this list is the Globster, an unidentified organic mass that washes up on the shoreline of an ocean or other body of water. The term was coined by Ivan T. Sanderson in 1962 to describe a carcass that washed up on a shore in Tasmania. The carcass had no visible eyes, no defined head, and no apparent bone structure. Since then, 24 different carcasses have appeared that have been described as globsters, the most recent in 2003. The size of globsters vary, but are generally quite large, such as the Dry Harbor carcass that washed up on an Alaskan beach in 1956. It was about 30 meters long and was covered in 5 centimeters of long reddish fur. One interesting hypothesis put forward by researchers is that globsters may be prehistoric animals that were trapped in ice, but later melted and simply washed ashore. I think the more intriguing question is, what gave birth to these things? Are there like mama globsters? Cause that's a little more than an unpleasant thought. And number 10 is the Jersey Devil. Believed to inhabit the Pine Barrens of southern New Jersey in the United States, the description of the Jersey Devil is a flying two-legged creature with hooves. The story of the Jersey Devil dates all the way back to the 1700s when the sight of one meant an omen of disaster or war, but multiple sightings did not begin until the early 1900s. Some researchers have reported that over 2,000 witnesses have claimed seeing this creature over the centuries. Although very rare, sightings do continue all the way up to the present day. Okay, in all seriousness, if there is a bat, horse, goat faced monster out there, I want off this planet.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
crushing is violence, and so is your silence when it's rooted in compliance. To stand firm in loving defiance, make Archer Alliance, give voice to the fire. Move people to the beat of the wind, gather yourself and begin to dance the song until it ends. We are winners, champions of the light, forming in numbers and might. Keep the truth close in sight. And woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands. Find your teachers in the voice of the forest. Some plug you can't ignore this wisdom of the voiceless. Remedies are bountiful and surround us from the garden to the farthest. Prayer made of stardust. Find your healing in the music that calls you, the voice that enthralls you. What do you belong to? Eyes up, there's the setting of the sun. Give thanks to each and everyone. The lesson is the medicine woman. Medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands.
Back into the messages and action. The art is feeding, stop, start the disbelieving. Cause the garden holds the shards, the medicine is in the seeds. When we hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evident, the wolf, the hawk, the bear clan. We hold tight to our right to protect, and we know our might is tenfold in connection. Our elders hold them bright lights, we protect them. The medicine is evidence, the wolf, the hawk, the medicine woman. Medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands. Medicine woman, medicine man, walk in with grace. I know your face and I trust your hands.
Now, go find the others.com.
I don't want to sound like a queer or nothing, but I think unicorns are kick-ass.